Good afternoon, and welcome to Lunch with Leaders. I'm Cindy Morgan. I'm the Vice President of Organizational Development and Learning, and I'm so glad that you're here. So I hope you'll join me and sit back, close out your email, take a nice deep breath, and settle in. We have an amazing hour ahead for you. So I want to make sure you feel like you know how to fully participate and engage with us and our speaker today. So let me introduce Youngin Cho, our executive producer from PMA, and she's going to give you a couple of tips and housekeeping items so you can participate fully. Youngin, take it away.
Thanks, Cindy. Thank you all for joining today. We're thrilled to have Kevin on our first Lunch with Leaders of the year. It's great to see some familiar names, and for those joining us for the first time, we would love to make this session engaging. So please have your cell phones ready for the poll. Share your comment in chat. Our team has been thinking about this conversation for about 6 months. I think we have most of the key questions covered, but Kevin is also willing to take additional questions. So please send them in the Q&A window, and we'll get to as many as we can. We'll also collate the chat and questions and share it with Kevin following today to help plan for additional communication in the future. So thank you for joining and enjoy the show. Back to you.
Thanks, Youngin. Always appreciate your participation here. And I hope the audience will join me in wishing you a very happy birthday today. I'm so glad we could celebrate you on your birthday at Lunch with Leaders. And we have Kevin as our guest, which is a nice gift for both of us. So thanks for all you do for the show. So welcome to those who this is your first time at Lunch with Leaders, and welcome back to those who have joined us for some of our past episodes. So our goal here is to be in community together with other leaders across Penn Medicine as we're facing some really challenging times. This is also a place where we can share our own journeys as well as our own tips for leading. So I look forward to having an engaging conversation in the chat. So let's do a quick review. Letters, I love getting your letters, and we had a lot of letters coming out of our last show of 2020, where we had Dr. Chris Miller, Karina Sakoutris, and Tammy Montroy. It was off the chain. I heard from so many of you. I think I had like a week-long joy hangover. So I really appreciate all of the feedback, emails, texts, even birthday wishes. You're such a great group of folks. I just love being in community with you. Thank you for that. I want to shout out Dr. Mike Feldman from Pathology, who like vowed that his New Year's resolution is to become a Lunch with Leaders groupie, which, Mike, I'm glad that you're like on the bandwagon now. Thanks for joining us. Also want to shout out Eleanor Miller, an OCN manager in oncology, for her kind words. And on a side note, I had an amazing birthday. Thanks so much to all that wished me a happy birthday. I'm 50. I appreciated all the people who reached out to say that they're 50 and it's cool and I look good, better than 50. And everyone's like, you're 50. And I have to just chuckle. And I put a picture of my parents. They're kind of like vampires. Bonnie and Bob Morgan, 77 years old, think they look pretty darn good. So I feel very lucky to both have them and then have some of their good genes. So thank you for the love and all of the wishes. It really meant a lot to me. So we have a commercial for today, and we really listen to your feedback when you do reach out to us. And I've had people say, Cindy, I love the show, but I'm finding myself doing a screen grab, or I'm taking my phone and taking a picture of the screen so I can get the tips and have them. So good news. You can go right to our Lead Strong website where we have every back episode of Lunch with Leaders. Not only do we have the episode in video format, but we also have all of the materials. So you can have the materials right on your desktop to save. So no more pictures or screenshots. So it'll be a little easier. The other thing we heard was, oh gosh, I wish I could listen on the run, on my commute, while I'm making dinner. Well, thanks. We love you, fans, and we know how much you love podcasts. So now, thanks to our support from IT and help from Casey from PMA, you can now download every back episode of Lunch with Leaders as a podcast and listen wherever it's most convenient for you. So thanks again for your feedback, and want to just make sure that you know that those tools are available to you. So let's talk a little bit about today. So as you know, we're very excited to have Kevin Mahoney, our CEO, on Lunch with Leaders today. And I've been, as Youngin kind of hinted, we've been hoping that Kevin would join us for about 6 months since the start of the show. So it's a big day. What we hope to talk to Kevin about is his thoughts on leadership in general and how he ultimately drove his career on the CEO track, his reflections in his first year on the job, especially in light of everything that's happened in 2020 and 2021. I want to turn our attention and talk about the future of Penn Medicine and where does he see us going. And finally, I hope that through the conversation, we can all get to know him even a little bit more personally through this. So first, let's start with you. Got to check in with you. This is where you can pull out your phones, not to take a screen picture anymore, but to have a little participation. So using your cell phone, text Penn Medicine 918 to 22333. Then you'll be in the chat. And I'd really love to know, what emotions are you feeling today? As you know, we always check in. We want to see how you're doing. What emotions are you feeling today? So text me your word. I want to see what comes up. And while we wait for your responses, it is a great pleasure and honor to introduce you to Kevin Mahoney, the CEO of the University of Pennsylvania Health System. Kevin, we're so lucky to have you. Please feel free to come on to the screen. You can unmute yourself and unmute your camera.
Yes, no.
I hear you, but I'm not seeing you all of a sudden. Oh, there you are. Hello. Thanks for joining me.
Need to buy more bandwidth.
Yeah, in the office. Well, thanks for coming on. So maybe we could turn to the results of our poll around what emotions people are feeling. But before we, let's see how people are feeling today. All right, let's see. These are some good words. Hopeful, excited, energized, grateful, weary, tired, depleted, stressed, nauseated, sorry, missing the 80s. Awesome, worried. Oh, nervous about the inauguration.
Mm-hmm.
Understandable. Impeachy. Good one. Kevin, do these words surprise you at all?
Not at all. Nope.
If I had to ask you for your word today, what would you have put in?
Optimistic.
Oh, I like that one. I think I'm feeling that way too.
But I may have also gone with fat, which is one of the ones that are in here.
Thank you for sharing how you're feeling today. And maybe we can go back to that other slide, Casey, around the trends. So what you can see is since June, we saw a really big shift last time. And I think vaccine excitement had definitely taken hold. And as you can see, there was a tremendous shift to more positive emotions. And I think we saw some of those similar types of things today. So it's really nice to see our own evolution in terms of how people are feeling in our leadership community. So thanks for sharing your emotions and thanks for being here today. So Kevin, thanks again for joining us. I feel very excited to have a conversation with you. So let's start at the beginning. Take me back a little bit. What was Kevin Mahoney like as a kid? Did you come out of the womb as a leader? Were you like the captain of your sports team or a class officer? Like, when did you know you were a leader?
So I've reflected on my family a lot, and for those of you who've heard this, I apologize for going through it once again, but I came from a large Irish Catholic family. Both parents were alcoholics. We didn't have much, but we hung together, and I think I became a leader, inordinate amount of pressure put on my oldest brother. As the firstborn, you know, expectations are way too high. My next brother, he always had the ability to flee, and he's the only one of 10 that lives in Florida. So he vacated. So right, wrong, good, bad, or indifferent, a lot of things happened in the house, happened on my shoulders. And I was reminded, going through some old pictures this week, when I came back from college, my first time I had been away, my little brothers and sisters, you know, were hanging out with me, and they were so grateful that I was home, and I look at them and I realize I was more their uncle than their brother because of the generational distance between us. So I think I got great core values from my parents, But you asked about leadership. I think early on I had to step up and carry perhaps more than someone normally would at that age. In terms
Thanks
of
for
sports,
sharing that. Yeah.
I enjoyed sports. I enjoyed being part of the Scouts. I always enjoyed belonging to something and being in a community. And the camaraderie is what mostly I enjoyed out of that. And, I don't think I was born a CEO, but I don't think any of us are born CEOs. I think it evolves, and we can talk about that more over the next hour.
Thanks. Let's talk a little bit about this. When did you know you wanted to be a CEO? And did you then structure your career and the roles that you took to add up to the CEO track? Or was it like you had a couple of jobs and ultimately your skills grew and opportunities presented themselves to you, and so you wound up on the CEO track? How did you figure that out?
So it's a great question, one that I'm very comfortable talking about. So I am made up of 99% confidence. I am confident in my abilities. I'm confident that I can figure things out. So yeah, early on, naturally, I thought I should be the CEO, and I just wonder what took everybody so long to come to the same realization that that I had. But what was more important to me, and advice I want to impart, people walk in, they call me. I just got off the phone earlier today with a young man from East Stroudsburg University, and he's talking about his career, and what do you want to be? And I want to be a CEO, and I said, I can make it a CEO tomorrow. But it's going to be the CEO of a hospital in Searchlight, Nevada. And no, I meant I want to be the CEO of Penn. And I said, those are two different things. So I will, again, point out to people, I think the best career advice I can give you is join your organization first and your job second. I had so many friends that came out of Temple with me who religiously said, after 24 months, I have to be here, and after 36 months, I have to be here, and 10 years, I'm going to be here, and 15 years, and when I'm 40, I'm going to be a CEO. And when they were 40, their family had fallen apart. They were miserable. They weren't happy because they didn't achieve that goal. And in the meantime, they were constantly moving. Even if they were happy doing what they were doing, they were moving because they had this prescribed career path. So I believe life comes to you. And again, in my younger days, I played baseball forever and I coached a lot of baseball. The hardest thing in baseball, if you're a batter, is to wait for the pitch to come to you. Because, if you're aggressive, you want to swing right away. I'm going to smash a home run. But if it's curveball, you're going to strike out. So waiting for things to come. But if you're in a great organization like Penn Medicine, good things are going to come your way. And you can scoop those up. So I think you end up in life exactly where you're meant to be in terms of your career. So I never spend a lot of time fixating on my career. I spend a lot of time fixating on making my organization better.
Thanks. That really resonates for me. I always think about how do I get in the flow versus try to force things, because the energy is so different. I really appreciate that. How have you grown your leaderships over the years? Did you take classes, advanced degrees? Have you had mentors and sponsors? What were some of the most impactful developmental strategies that you've employed?
So again, I think I had a great foundation from my parents in terms of core values, and that was critical to being able to build forward. Even today, I always go through what would my parents have done? How is the way, if my mom read about this in the paper tomorrow, would she be proud of me? Or would she be mad at me? And, so those quick litmus tests, I think, guide us. So having really strong core values. I've been blessed with so many mentors. And mentors don't just include people above me that have guided, but also so many people throughout the organization that have taught me dedication to a cause and how to go about functioning and carrying on. I love to tell the story in high school. Herman Tyler, who lived right over here on Brandywine Street in Mantua, Herman was the head janitor in the high school. And Herman would come get me out of class to line the football field. And I would sit there lining the football field with Herman, and he would talk to me. And I tell everybody, I graduated from high school, but Herman Tyler taught me to be a man. And we stayed friends. He unfortunately just passed away. But we stayed friends from, you know, 1975 until just a couple months ago. And you couldn't have people from two more disparate spots. But he taught me elegance, you know, when kids on the main line were treating the janitors badly. You know, he would stand up, but he did it with grace and elegance and just intestinal fortitude that was remarkable. So I've looked for mentors all over, and not just above me. I've been blessed to work for some great leaders. I've also been blessed to work for some really bad leaders. So you can learn, you know, from everybody in every situation, and I try to do that. In terms of other things, you know, I am a lifelong learner. I went back to Temple just a couple of years ago to get my doctorate, and I think it's critical that we have the intellectual curiosity to continue to move forward. And, you know, I read a lot. I read a pretty disparate group, not just healthcare leaders, but military leaders. I read history, but I'm always trying to figure out curiosity, why things are the way they are. And it takes time. It takes a lot of energy. You talked about letting things flow. Trying to figure things out takes a lot of energy, but it's worth investing in. So yeah. I believe you learn from above, you learn from people you work with, you learn in your community, and we should all take advantage of PMA and the tuition reimbursement and continue to push forward. If you're busy, and so many of us are, and you can only take a quick online seminar at Wharton, it's still worth meeting new people and pushing yourself forward.
Thanks. I love that. I kind of also ascribe to the everyone is a teacher that you meet or can be if you're open to it. You've been an amazing mentor and teacher for me. I would just go on record to say you've been the longest boss I've ever had, and I've learned a tremendous amount from you, watching your brain work in meetings. It's fun.
I need a gold star.
All right, I'll get you that. No problem. I got that. No problem. Some of the literature around leading and how leaders grow and develop, they talk a little bit about learning from experience, and often that goes hand in hand with mistakes or failures or setbacks. Often we don't talk about these things. We just talk about our successes, or people see the success that we've had and assume that there's been no shadow side to any of that. Would you go on record by saying maybe a mistake or a setback that you had that you really learned from and then in turn became who you were becoming?
So I don't subscribe to the failure is a good way forward. And I like to win. I don't like to fail. I think work experience, every day you're learning, good and bad. You know, what went right and how did you learn so you can build that muscle memory to do it over and over again. I've made more mistakes, you know, I've made mistakes today, and I'll continue to make mistakes. And it's not the act, it's the journey of how you amalgamate all these experiences, good and bad, and put them together and recognize you think you have a playbook, but you don't. All you have your core values and you have your environment. And you have to react to the environment, and it changes all the time. You know, the playbook that we had on March the 6th, when we stood shoulder to shoulder at Chester County Hospital opening the new pavilion, and that was really the last time we were all together as a group. That playbook of build a hospital, recruit new doctors, recruit more staff, and we'll keep moving forward. And it was gone in, you know, 12 hours, and you had to adapt. So adapting, I think, is just critically important. I will tell you that there are things that I have failed at that haunt me to this day, but they are always personal. It's an employee that I didn't treat in retrospect the way I wish I had. It's a coworker that maybe I was you know, snarky to or put down, not realizing. So when I was younger, you know, I think all of us are like this. You know, you think the world, it's not that hard. Like everything's coming your way. And then some tragedies happen and you realize that. So Stephen Covey's book on the 7 Habits of Highly Effective People, don't bother reading it. I think the only one that is worth knowing is empathy. And I didn't learn empathy until much later in my life. And knowing first where somebody's coming from and what they're going through before you say something, it's critical, but it was something I had to learn. So if there are failures in my career, it's been on a personal basis, again, with a coworker or someone that I wish I had a better relationship with, or I caused undue pain, using my leverage in my job.
Thanks. Marielle Harden from the chat said, I need a Kevin Mahoney quote notebook. This is so great. People like the playbook of the core values, and it's refreshing, Karen Sylvester says, to hear that someone in a leadership role had made a mistake and it was a part of your growth. Kim loves the empathy line. I think the one other takeaway that I'd emphasize with that Stephen Covey goes to the point that you made earlier about being a lifelong learner. And he said, you always have to be sharpening your saw. And I think you spoke to that as well. So those two points, I think, really hit home. So you hinted on it. What a first year. Oh, my God. Talk about.
Cindy, yeah. I just want to go back. The helicopter is landing, so I apologize for I can't help but look at that helicopter and think of the patient and the family that are inside and what they're going through. And again, that motivation is something that we always need to keep at the forefront. And having said that, now I lost my train of thought, so I'll come back to it.
No problem. You hinted at what a year it's been, and the adaptability of you and the leadership team has been nothing short of extraordinary. And boy, what a first year as a CEO. What's it been like to be you?
It has been a privilege and an honor. And I don't say that tritely. Being me is the most remarkable thing because I have 40,000 people on any project. People lean in and they get it done. And it is truly remarkable. And, you know, the new building's going up behind me. And in the throes of the crisis, we talked about, can we build a field hospital? And we said, well, why don't we just build more of that, open the pavilion faster? And, man, it was a throwaway line. Like, I went to Steve Grulich and Regina Cunningham and the team and said, you know, how many beds could we open in 3 weeks? Because we knew the governor's shutdown was coming. And they said, we think we can get you 150 beds, and they did, fully operational in 3 weeks. And you ask me what it's like, you know, I'm in awe when people can grab onto things and just lean in and get it done. And we do it, I think, by trying not to be hierarchical. So we opened on 15 South Tower, the vaccine station, and, you know, yesterday we went over 30,000 vaccines needles and arms, and far and away more than our competitors. But also, Ida Pride, Deb Driscoll out of the seat, you know, Friday night, she was still there consenting patients. Regina Cunningham is the CEO, is up there. Julia Puckler is up there registering. When you say what it's like, it doesn't matter what Penn Medicine's faced with. We turn our attention to it and we get it done. What was different with the pandemic, and, you know, as a leader, I worry pre-pandemic, what's 2025, what's 2030? How am I going to get the organization to that location? Unfortunately, when the pandemic hit, we had to say, what's the next 24 hours? What's the next 48 hours? Do we have enough PPE? Do we have enough N95s? Do we have enough small N95s? Ventilators, thermal scanners. The thermal scanners aren't working. We got the wrong batteries. I mean, we went from planning big buildings like the one behind me to, you know, a planning horizon that was counted in hours, not in days. But the other thing that we tried to do, and I hope we were successful, and Cindy, you're on the call, so you remember this, 8 o'clock and 4 o'clock every day, 7 days a week for months, the senior leadership, we were on the phone and we ticked through what the issues were, and we debated them and we wrestled with them, and we came up with solutions. Unfailingly, everyone participated. I can't think of, short of maybe half a dozen times, where somebody wasn't on that call. And then we cascaded the communication out. So HUP was cascading down, CPUP was cascading down, and it was remarkable. The challenge now is, and we were using words optimistic and the like, we need to lift our eyes up. We need to get back to still focused on today, but also getting back to 2025 and 2030, and what are the bold, audacious goals that Penn's going to pursue so that we can stay in the forefront.
Thanks. You mentioned having to tell Dr. Driscoll to go home. So many of our leaders have been trying to both take care of themselves as well as the team. What have been some of your strategies for both self-care and taking care of your leadership team in the organization? So, what's worked?
Yeah. In terms of my personal reflection, I don't need much balance because for those of you who don't know Pam, we've been together since we were 18. We've been married for forever. We will be married forever. And there's nobody like you guys have an advocate. If I ever grumble about somebody not working hard enough or something not going right, she knocks me upside the head and says, stop it. Like, that's not, you got to get back to leading and stop. Stop feeling sorry and complaining. And Pam is my alter ego in that regard. So she and I, we'll walk, 5 miles on Saturday, 5 miles on Sunday. I try to walk during the week. And we bounce ideas off and things like that. So I'm blessed in that regard. And then I love and adore my children, and They keep me challenged because they're always willing to toss one at dad, and it's good. So I think personally that's how I stay balanced with my family. In terms of the organization, we talk a lot about resiliency and things like that. I'm trying to build an organization where there's organizational health, not so much individual health. Like, it bothers me that the world has gotten to the point where we have to teach each other to be resilient and how to get through. And I'm hoping that we can build an organization and continue to grow an organization that is harassment free and supportive. And, we're intuitively, we look out for each other, not because, I or somebody said we should look out for each other. I hope I've conveyed, and I will continue to convey, that. And we said this early on, Cindy, we set up a no layoff policy. It was still March. Mayo and others were announcing layoffs. So we said no one's going to lose their job over the pandemic. And I think we stuck with that. We set up emergency fund. But we also made a pledge that people would not be in harm's way without the right equipment. And, it was touch and go in a couple days of inventory here and there, but we, different than other hospitals, I think we truly invested in personal protective equipment and tried to make sure that everybody had the protection they needed to go into harm's way, and we recognized that.
I feel really proud of some of those decisions that you led and we all supported. I think, throwing out the old playbook and saying, okay, moment to moment, what are we going to do to make our community safe and our culture sustained. I think those choices were really awesome, and I thank you for that. Some of the other choices that you've made following George Floyd's murder last year and your continued focus and leadership around addressing racism and equity, all that was really, I think, impressive. And I've been impressed with the engagement and the momentum and some of the early actions that are starting to take place. I think I'm very much looking forward to our day of service and our inaugural Martin Luther King Day of Service on Monday, and thank you for that leadership move. We're looking forward, next, the next show, we're going to talk about the ACT strategic roadmap. But I have to ask you, in your opinion, what are our first priorities for change? And what advice do you have for us leaders around how we keep driving change to address these important issues across our culture?
I think it might be worthwhile just to tell you a little bit about my personal journey through racism and inequality, and that may help you know where my head's at. So I grew up in the 60s and the 70s, and you know, Martin Luther King was someone that I admired and I followed, and John Lewis, the congressman that marched with him, you know, I thought the world of John Lewis. I took my family to the Pettus Bridge in Selma, Alabama. We walked over the bridge together. We went through the town. We saw the history behind it. But I wasn't living it. Like it was almost, like it was a Vaseline on a scar, where I said, I'm not racist. You know, I've preached to my kids. I've gone, you know, we've done different things. And it wasn't until George Floyd, when one of our young doctors said to me, Kevin, you're not a racist, but you're not anti-racism. And you need to proactively go out and change the world. And not, it's not enough for you to say, again, you know, I'm not, it's an accent on racism is unacceptable, absolutely. But anti-racism needs to be the way we conduct ourselves. And I pledged to everybody on May 31st that I would become a champion to make Penn a more just culture, to make Philadelphia a more just city. And hopefully we can lead the nation in how we do it. But it takes intentionality. You know, it's not a checkbox where we say, you know, a lot of people wrote to me saying, how come we don't have Martin Luther King's Day off? We made it. Now, I could sit there and say, check, problem solved, you know, let's get on with it. But this is not a checkbox solution. This is a cultural transformation, as you mentioned. And it requires everyone who's listened, you know, the several hundred people that are on this. I need everyone to pledge that we are going to intentionally go about eliminating racism by becoming anti-racist. And I mentioned my upbringing, but I was privileged. I'm a white male. I come from a privileged position, and I shouldn't take too much credit for my success because a lot was handed to me. And I want in the future that every person that lives in this country and across the globe has that same starting point. And we are a long way from there. We made the donation part of the university's $100 million pledge. $50 million comes from the health system. And again, these are important steps. But there, I need everyone culturally to feel it. It's our moral imperative to make this change. And, you know, we've begun to lean in on health equity. We put it into management incentive plan. Dr. Liz Howell, who just joined us in the middle of the pandemic, and Dr. Howell and I have set out a pledge of we'd like to eliminate maternal mortality in the Delaware Valley by 2025. And you know, we a good way to start that is to make sure it's in our incentive plan, so we're all pulling in that direction. Not, Dr. Howell, why don't you go do it, or let's run an ad in the paper saying we're going to do it. Let's put our paychecks at risk to do that, and that's what the senior leadership did. Richard Wender, who joined us in family medicine, his position prior to this was with the American Cancer Society. When we said we're going to do colorectal screening in Black population as a measure of how I get paid, how Larry Jameson gets paid, how Keith Casper gets paid, how Phil Ocala gets paid, and Richard's there to help us. Like that again, that's Penn leaning into something to make the change. So I want to stay in our lane. Our lane is health equity. Our lane is employment and job creation. And those are the things that we need to focus as sharply as we can and as quickly as we can. The other thing we talked about, you know, a moment of on Franklin Field of white coats for Black lives, that moment has to become a movement. And movements, they fade out. Like, they're hard to sustain. They only sustain if we all believe in it. And I'm asking everybody that's listening to join me in that new challenge that we're facing. And, you know, we're going to get to it. I was so proud of Bob Challender and Deb Micarelli and Joe Milano, and I'm sure I'm missing people, and I apologize. Mike Feldman, I apologize for anyone that I left out of that statement. But we needed to hire 100 people to stand up COVID testing in the lab. And 50 of those employees came from the West Philadelphia Skills Initiative. These are high school and GED students that we've recruited. And, you know, again, you could feel good about yourself and say, you know, I'm making a difference. What I loved, I'm going to continue to hammer this point home. It wasn't 24 hours after we hired him when Bob Challender said, now we need to get him in the Penn Medicine Academy and get him an associate's degree and a bachelor's degree so that they can have a great career. And that's the energy that I need. It's not enough to say we hired 50 kids from the neighborhood. You know, aren't we great? We hired the next CEOs in that group, and we're going to make sure that they get trained, and they're great, energetic kids. But they have not, again, had the privilege that many of us have had, and I want to make sure they have it.
Thanks. Well, I'll tell you, your energy is being matched and mirrored in the chat, which is on fire with leaders that are saying right on that they're with you, they're going to take action. So I think there's a lot of energy. I know for myself, our team, I'm into this. So thank you for your leadership on this.
But I also, you know, I got early on, I was having a conversation with Megan Lane Fall, who's in anesthesia. Mm-hmm. And I said to her, I worry about if I say African-American or Black or what, like, I'm going to say the wrong thing and I'm going to upset everybody. And she said, Kevin, people listen to what your heart's saying, not necessarily. So I think we need to become a little less careful and a little more intentional in pushing forward and solving what is just an intractable problem in America. And I think we can do it. I think the Mercy acquisition is an example of that. We could have said we got a new hospital with 500 beds. You know, we can just absorb those patients into Hupp and Presbyterian. But it wouldn't have been right for the patients in the neighborhood that now they have to travel 30 blocks to get health care. And, you know, 30 blocks is it's a long way if you don't have a car, if, you know, you're a couple of jobs, you have a lot going on, and we need to rewire ourselves. And again, my term of empathy is what's driving a lot of what I'm going through, because if you walked in the shoes of an 18-year-old man on Woodland Avenue in Southwest Philly and walked in my shoes as an 18-year-old in Berwyn, Pennsylvania, those are two, and you say, isn't Kevin great? You know, he had all this success. It was an unfair fight that, you know, that what I was given and the foundation I was able to launch upon should be available to everybody.
Thanks. Let's turn our attention to the future, and hopefully we'll be continuing to drive a different future from a cultural perspective and drive out racism and have more equity. That's definitely on the agenda. But the world seems like it's going to be really changed as we kind of all get vaccinated and get back to some semblance of normal. And yet we've learned so much from this experience, and some things have changed that we may want to stick. What do you think is going to stick around and be the new normal coming post-COVID life?
Yeah. So I've stopped using the term new normal. And,
okay.
You know, I've mentioned that I read history a lot, and I want to talk a little bit about Washington, D.C. last week and next week and the like, but we are... I always, growing up, I said, I wish I was an Apollo astronaut because they're making history. Or I wish I could have been in World War II. Or I wish I could have been with Martin Luther King. I wish I had been in great places. I wish I had been in Independence Hall. I'm here to tell you, you're in the middle of history. What has taken place today, people are going to be talking about for decades. And people are going to write books and talk about it. So we're living not... We're not reading history, we're in history. And I think that the challenge we have is there's not going to be a new normal. There's an accelerant of trends. So telemedicine was not created because of the pandemic. Telemedicine is something that one part of the organization has played with for a decade. We've invested a lot of money in it. But on you know, the middle of March when we turned it on, because we had to cancel so many visits, telemedicine took off. So it wasn't created, but it was accelerated by the pandemic. And the work from home, work-life balance, the pandemic didn't create that. It highlighted it. But again, these trends are going to continue. I've never bought anything online in my life, and I probably never will. But Amazon wasn't created by the pandemic. But man, their stock sure skyrocketed as a result of the pandemic. And these trends are going to continue to accelerate forward. What that means for us at Penn Medicine, I think is critical. And I'll try to give you some insight into that.
Yeah, I'd love to hear it.
So one is we have additional sites of delivery. So naturally, we have the hospital, we have the physician office, and then we always had home care. But home care was always referred to as post-acute. You know, you come in for surgery and somebody had to check your scar, so a visiting nurse would come see you, or for wound care or different things like that. Home care, hospital at home, is going to become a distinct site of delivery. And we need to prepare for that. Justin Beckelman and Bob Vonderheide in the Cancer Center, they pushed 13 chemotherapy agents into the home. Some of those chemotherapy agents, the patient used to get admitted to the hospital. And now we are able, and we've proven that we can safely deliver that chemotherapy at home. And that is going to continue. And frankly, that is a competitive advantage for us, because no other health system around us has Penn Home Infusion, has Penn Home Care as robust as we have it. So you're going to see that move. Not, you know, we've talked about the deconstruction from inpatient to outpatient. So right now, 65%+ of our net revenue comes from the ambulatory side. But you're going to see that deconstruction just continue to happen from the ambulatory to home and to the phone and virtually. And so 2025, 2030, the health system is still going to be focused on advanced care. That pavilion will be filled. We're going to continue to grow on each of the campuses, but we're also going to grow these additional delivery sites, not as a appendage to the hospital, which many of them have been, but as a freestanding focused factory of how do we deliver hospital care at home. That'll drive down the cost of healthcare. That'll lead to more jobs, because people, industry will be able to, and more jobs means more people with insurance, which means we're in a good shape. So it's a very virtuous cycle that we're going to be under. I have a master plan for every campus. You know, we're opening proton therapy at Lancaster next week. I believe the cyclotron will arrive. The hub campus, I have plans, and I have plans for each of the campuses as we move forward. And as long as we continue to function as a team, we'll be able to deliver on those. I want to be careful of our time, Cindy, and leave some for questions.
Yeah, thanks. Can I ask a follow-up question? What do you think are the leadership skills or competencies or attributes that are going to be important for our leadership population to be honing in on as we think about accelerating some of the future state?
Yeah. So a lot of people would say you need to be an agile thinker. You need to be nimble. You should figure out digital. Those are all technical competencies. And, you know, I think they are things that you should pursue and understand. But the number one competency you need to understand about leadership is leadership equals belonging, and belonging equals community. People want to join an organization because humans want to work on something that's bigger than themselves. And we need to aspire to lift everybody up so they know that they're working on something bigger than themselves. That's the first, and I'm going to come back to it. The second is they want to belong to a place where you don't have to worry about your paycheck. And as leaders, if we can provide the financial security where we can keep going and keep moving forward and people don't have to wonder, you know, is there going to be a layoff? Am I going to lose my position? They will work harder and they want to be part and they'll give us everything. And then people in general, I think everybody wants order in their lives. They want to know. The fear of the unknown, I think, is so debilitating. I've referenced my son a lot. He jumps out of planes at 30,000 feet. You know, at 30,000 feet, if there's a bump in the plane, like I'm saying Hail Marys, I'm ready for the exit. And he's willing to jump out of a plane at 30,000 feet, you know, with an oxygen mask. So his everybody has fear in different things, but mostly what people want is to know that there's an order to my life in front of me. And Penn Medicine can provide that. So leadership means belonging in community. The way we can get people to lift their eyes up and aspire is to recall 60% of the health system's bottom line supports the research mission. So you may not have heard, I hope you have, but Dr. Drew Weissman, who was a Penn physician, he's still here. Drew did the groundbreaking work on the microRNA, which is the basis of the Pfizer and Moderna vaccine. So every time somebody's getting a needle in their arm and you watch that 2 million across the United States, 20 million, 30 million, you need to remember that you were part of that because 60 cents of every dollar that you made in the health system went to support research, including Dr. Weissman. So I've said this before, we're not a revenue cycle person. We're not an environmental service worker. We're not a transport, a nurse, a doctor. We're all inventors. We're all part of massive organization that's trying to change the way the world is. And I think the vaccine is a very pertinent example. So part of what we need to do is to make sure that people understand, and this is a core competency, working at Penn means you're working for something bigger than yourself. And it's a worthwhile endeavor. It's not punch the clock. It's we're changing the world. And it's so critical that people understand that because work's hard. You know, it's a four-letter word that ends in K. Like, it is hard. And as leaders, again, we need to understand, we need to, this is answering your question, Cindy, about competency.
Yeah.
The ability to communicate a community, the ability to communicate you belong, I think is what is going to separate out a technical leader from a true leader that you know can lead an organization and carry it forward. And I challenge all to become that aspirational leader of, yeah, you may think you're just bolting something on to the new building. You know, we referenced opening the building in the pandemic, getting it ready. You know, the union workers, they were all in 24 hours a day. They were like, we're going to save Philadelphia by getting these beds ready. And they didn't think of themselves as, you know, a carpenter or an electrician. They thought of themselves as, we're part of the Penn team that's going to stave off the pandemic. So that, I think, will be the true competency of future leaders, is the ability to make people feel like they belong and truly have them belong, not just feel, but also they do belong. And I think that'll take care of some of our racism issues. It'll take care of, you know, why do I work at Penn? And, you know, why am I working so hard? Well, you're working so hard because we need to create the next vaccine to save our grandkids. We need to create a cure for cancer and heart disease. And so if belonging was a core competency, and I'm sure in every book you read, you'll never come across that, but I think the competency of making people feel like they are the most important person on the team is just critical.
Thank you. The chat is lighting up with people agreeing with that, and I find every morning it's easy to wake up and come to work because we're attached to something bigger. And I appreciate that you feel that way also. So yeah, but everyone's.
But also, Cindy, I've given a lot of examples here. you know, because I, you know, I'm looking out and that's visually what you think about. But you can go to Chester County Hospital, where this week they gave out vaccines to the local volunteer clinic, Community Volunteers in Medicine. And I can't, you know, I got so many emails from people thanking me for what Chester County Hospital did. And Chester County Hospital has taken patients from Lancaster, as Lancaster has been overwhelmed and transferred them down. I mentioned proton therapy. Like everybody in every location, Pennsylvania Hospital has the lowest mortality at 5.4% of COVID-19 patients. And in the system, but also across the Mid-Atlantic and the Northeast region, and I put them up against the national averages. So we have so much to be proud of. And I think the other important thing is people view the organization by what's right in front of them. And as leaders, we need to tie together how working on Founders 11 makes you part of Penn Medicine, but also how working in the Matthews Cancer Center up at Princeton makes you part of Penn Medicine. Or working in Woodbury Heights, New Jersey in the CSA practice, you're part of Penn Medicine. And again, as leaders, we need to thread that together because the cloth is so strong. But if we don't take time to explain what part of the cloth you are and how you fit in, you know, a lot of it's in one ear and out the other.
Thank you. Kevin, it was important for you to have me ask the audience a question. And so I'd love to have everyone answer with a response in the chat while you take a glass of water. Kevin wants to know, leaders, do you feel prepared and confident and have the resources you need to do your jobs as leaders? And what can he be doing to better support you as leaders across Penn Medicine? So we'd love to hear your responses in the chat. As Youngin previewed earlier, we're going to collate all this and feed that back to Kevin and the leadership team. So we'd really love to hear, do you feel prepared and confident, and do you have the resources you need to lead? What can Kevin be doing to better support you as a leader? So Kevin, I know we only have a couple minutes. The hottest question in the chat is, what leadership books would you recommend? What are you reading? What books would you recommend on leading?
Mm-hmm. So I love the Walter Isaacson book on Steve Jobs. I think it is it's worth the read. It's relatively thick, but he does a really nice job. Knowing Steve Jobs and going through it is it's just fascinating. It may be more fascinating to me because I went from punch cards to an Apple IIe in 1981, and you know, so early on. But I think it's an interesting read on a personality, and when you go back to work-life balance, he had none, and his personal life was just early on was just a mess. And so I think that a book that I love is Radical Inclusion. Written by Dr. Martin, I'm sorry, General Martin Dempsey, and he, although he's in the military, he mostly it's about leadership, and I find him very helpful. And then I have a John Grisham book on my nightstand that I need to get to, so that I read some fiction, you know, as well. But I think autobiographies of leaders that are well written is a great way for me to dissect how they approach things and thought about things.
Thanks. The chat's lighting up. We'll collate all that information for you in terms of people feeling supported. I've got one question. So in 1 minute or less, any last words of wisdom for our leaders watching today in terms of their career of leading?
Yeah. So again, as I get older, in personal integrity, I think is the measure of your life and the measure of your career success. And it's not necessarily positions and the like, but did I perform in a way that made me proud of myself and made me want to tell other people about my day? So, you know, if you end up in a confrontation with two of your workers, is that something you go home and tell your family about? Probably not. You know, but if you said, man, we pushed through 2,000 vaccines today, and the previous record had been 1,500. Like, that's something that you can get. So personal integrity is how I measure. Do I feel good about myself when I put my head on the pillow? And did I give it my best effort? Did I follow my core values? So maybe trite, but that's my go away is don't never compromise your personal integrity for anybody, including me, as you're moving forward. And if you think I'm asking too much or we're not doing it the right way, it's incumbent upon you to stand up and say, this isn't right. And if I'm true to my word and I listen, you know, you're going to have an impact, but never compromise your personal integrity.
Thank you. I think that's a great place to kind of say thank you to you. I want to thank you and the whole leadership team for everything that you've been doing to manage during these very challenging times. I feel very honored that I can represent the leadership population in thanking you for your relentless pursuit of excellence in all of these areas. And I know I'm very personally grateful. I know our audiences as well. So thank you so much for being a guest, sharing your thoughts on leadership. Been an amazing conversation. I learned a lot. And your support for our show has been fantastic. So thank you so much, Kevin. So I want to make sure that everyone is marking your calendar right now, because our next show on January 28th will be a continuation of some of the themes that we talked about today. I'm very excited to have the ACT Strategic Roadmap and our next steps for addressing racism and equity at Penn Medicine be our next topic. We have amazing guests, Dr. Eve Higginbotham from the Vice Dean for Inclusion and Diversity, Dwayne Duckett, our SVP and Chief Human Resources Officer. Dr. Judith McKenzie will be here. She is helping with all of the vaccination process. And Leah Rubini from PMA will be here as well. So I hope you'll join us so you can continue to learn about what steps you can take to keep taking the actions that we need to change our culture. I want to thank each of you for joining us today. I know how busy you all are, especially in the new year. Thank you for your service. We see you. We're so grateful for your leadership. We are stronger as we come into community together. So thank you for continuing to show up for Lunch with Leaders. So just a couple of reminders on the end note, please take the moment to go to the Lead Strong site for past recordings, slides, other useful leadership tools. We'd love to hear your feedback. As always, we'll post the link in the chat. We're working on CME credits and other types of credits, so that will be posted there. Don't forget to leave the poll everywhere. Happy birthday to Youngin. We'll look forward to seeing you at our next show. Thank you so much for all that you're doing and for tuning in today. Thanks, everyone.